Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 1025-1063, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We're live out here at Barrel House at Bridgestone Arena. The Predators hosting the Chicago Blackhawks tonight. Puck drop at 7 o'clock. Pre-game coverage starting right here on 1025 The Game at 6 p.m. But we had a couple of all-timers in college football yesterday. Alabama, Michigan, Texas, Washington in the college football playoff semifinals. And joining us now to break all of it down is Mitch Light of The Athletic. Mitch, I want to get into your thoughts on the CFP, but first I want to touch on what we saw from the Vols yesterday. Shut out Iowa, that high-powered Iowa offense. But we got to see the first of Nico Amoliava as a starter at Tennessee. What did you make of Nico's start and kind of the subsequent praise that he's been getting after that bowl game?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to like there. It was just the game was, I'm not going to say predictable because no one thought, you know, yeah, well, I guess you could think Tennessee was going to pitch a shutout against Iowa. But like that long drive where Iowa went down and the throw into double coverage, just like everything that Iowa does offensively looks so difficult. And you have to credit Tennessee, of course, for playing well defensively. But with all the issues they had in the secondary, you thought maybe Iowa could get some things done in the passing game. But it's just, and I've watched Iowa enough this year not to be shocked, but that was just brutal. But, yeah, I was very impressed with Nico. I mean, obviously he's got a live arm, made some really nice throws, some nice throws on the run. And I love a running quarterback. I just think in college football it is very difficult to win unless you've just got an elite team and elite talent all the way around at every position with a guy who can't get out of the pocket and make plays. And it was just, you know, that's not going to be his primary method of moving the ball down the field, but I think that was encouraging to see. He's definitely a good athlete. So, yeah, I mean, it was a very good defense to go against. There's not much not to like there, but, you know, it was one game. It was a bowl game. Obviously, there's going to be bigger challenges next year, but I think just going into the offseason, you couldn't have asked for much more from a confidence standpoint and just good vibes around the offense.
Good vibes going into 2024, I think, is totally fair. What Nico is going to be at Tennessee, I don't know, but I think you can at least feel encouraged. But I saw Joe Rexroad put out an article on The Athletic and basically said, you know, we're going to define the Josh Heupel era at Tennessee by the Nico Amoliava era at Tennessee. Do you agree with that?
I understand Joe's point. But I think in this day and age, things can change from a personnel standpoint so quickly that I don't necessarily think that's true. I mean, let's just say he struggles next year and then they go to the portal and they get the next Hendon Hooker. And then they have a guy who's just awesome and has two great years there. If this were 5-10 years ago and you really put a lot of stock in the guys you developed and you just swung and missed on a big quarterback recruit, and there's plenty of examples we can look at. Look at LSU for years before Joe Burrow. How many times did they miss on quarterback recruits that really hurt their offense? Other than that, you know, Zach Mettenberger year, they didn't get good quarterback play for like a decade. They recruited good quarterbacks. Like rewind 10 years, LSU, they could have fixed, plugged some holes there. The transfer portal. So I guess my point is, it makes perfect sense. If Nico hits, it's a great, you know, positive for Josh Heupel. But I think there's ways around it. For some reason, it doesn't work out.
Now, looking at this game, this national championship game, you know, Michigan's coming in, you know, with this vantage defensive front that looked all of what they've been hyped up to be the other last night. But then you have this Washington team who puts up points as fast as anybody, and Penix is looking all of like a top five pick than just about any quarterback out there. How do you see this game going from this standpoint? Because we've seen this before where you have this high-powered offense going against a staunch defense. We saw it in 11 with Oregon and Auburn. We saw it in 15 with Oregon and Ohio State, I believe. Do you think that Washington can continue to do what they have been doing throughout the season, and more importantly, what they were able to do to Texas? Because, yes, there's a high-powered offense, and we know it. We know Penix is great. But that front seven of Michigan is, I mean, they may be the best in the country.
Yeah, I do, because I think Penix does such a good job of getting rid of the ball. Like, his sack numbers are absurd. Like, I think he leads the country in fewest sacks allowed. Texas is a very good defensive front, too. And, you know, Washington's offensive line won the Joe Moore Award for the best offensive line in the country. You know, who knows if they truly are the quote-unquote best. But they're obviously very good. Penix is just so smart in you know, he's not really a runner, but we see him slide, and he keeps his eyes upfield as he's getting, you know, eluding the pressure. And let's be honest, I mean, he's in his sixth year of college. He's good at certain things. Like, Jalen Milroe took a lot of sacks. Jalen Milroe was in his first year as a starter. I think that was the difference in the game. Alabama had so many negative plays because of the sacks. That's not going to happen to Washington, or I think it's not going to happen to Washington. And the other thing about this offense is they catch everything. I mean, we talk about, you know, these receivers. Part of being receivers, as you know, Derek, being great athletes, separation, running routes. But a lot of it's just catching the darn ball, and they catch the ball every time. I think they had one drop yesterday. And he can spread it around to so many different people. The tight ends are good, too. So I really think Washington has answers for just about everything a defense is going to throw at them. And I think one thing I'm fascinated to watch, slight tangent here going forward, Ryan Grubb is going to get a head coaching opportunity at some point, their offensive coordinator. You know, Nick Saban tried to hire him in the offseason, and Grubb decided to stay at Washington. Kellen DeBoer has already proven himself to be a good offensive coordinator. You know, he was at Indiana, Fresno State. I'm not saying this is all Ryan Grubb, but sometimes you see an assistant leave the head coach and the offense takes a step back. I'm interested 2-3 years down the road if Washington can keep this going after Ryan Grubb moves on. So just a little storyline there to watch. I think they're maybe the best offensive coordinator in the country.
Now, Mitch, do you think this Washington defense, that front seven, can not stop Corum? Because I think Corum, and I hate to say it, believe me, I hate it even coming out of my mouth. Corum's a really good back, strong, powerful back. He can make plays. He's a playmaker. With what Washington wasn't able to do against Texas. Texas was able to run the football. Do you think they would be able to contain that Michigan run game?
That's going to be, I think, the storyline to watch there, because their defense has been fine. I'm looking right now in the Pac-12. They were right in the middle of the pack, 5.66 yards per play allowed. I know you talked about rushing, but, the thing about their offense is they have elite players at pretty much every spot. They don't really have that on defense. They've got some good pass rushers. Trice is really good. We saw him have a big game yesterday. And we'll see what happens with the cornerback. I forgot his name, the Oklahoma State kid that got hurt on maybe the last play of the game or the second to last play of the game. So Michigan is going to run the ball. And that just, you know, football, when you can run, it opens things up. And if Michigan's able to run, and that's, open some things up for J.J. McCarthy and the play action. You know, I love their tight end, Loveland. I think that's a way they can move the ball. But, you know, I think Washington's also going to score. So, sure, Michigan will move the ball, but I think Washington will have, you know, equal or greater success moving the ball. But that's definitely one of the things to watch in this game.
Now, before I pass it to Willie, and this is beside the this is off of the national championship game, what do you make of the – you know, because people are going to say, see what happened to Florida State? That's why they didn't allow them. That's why they chose to take Alabama over Florida State, because Florida State got dismantled in their bowl game. But do you make much of that? Because if you're not playing for a championship, that didn't look like the same Florida State team that we had watched throughout the year. And maybe it could have been just, hey, you know, we're not playing for anything. Guys are not playing. We don't have a starting quarterback, whatever. It could be that, or it could be that, you know, they made the right choice by not, putting Florida State in that fourth spot.
No, I don't put any stock in that game at all. I mean, you look at the opt-outs, so they've got injuries. They were obviously missing a quarterback, all of their elite players. And the one thing that Florida State was very good this year, whether or not you think they should make it or not, they were very good, had a great team. But from a roster standpoint, they still don't have the overall, 85-man depth that a Georgia has or Alabama has. I know Georgia had some opt-outs, not at the key positions, but if an Alabama or a Georgia have more opt-outs, they have more roster depth. Florida State's not really there yet from a roster depth. So not only are you missing top players, your twos and threes aren't as good as some of the other quote-unquote elite teams there. So I don't put any stock on that. If anything, I'm not saying this, but you could look at Alabama and say, wow, Milroe struggled. That Alabama offense wasn't great. Maybe, maybe Florida State should have gone. So I think you can spin it basically whatever side of the argument you're on, you can spin it that way. But I could absolutely no stock in that Florida State Georgia game from did the committee do the right thing standpoint.
Mitch, this is another one that is just completely hypothetical, but I thought about this as I was watching Alabama, and they really battled, and they did all of the things that allowed them to go from early in the season, a team that we thought may not be up to the standard that we've come to expect for Alabama, to a shot to get to the championship game. I mean, they're right there. They're one stop away, maybe, on a 4th-and-2 from winning that thing.
Sure. But
I still looked at them, and I didn't see the layers of talent that, say, a Georgia had. I would be really curious to have seen, and Georgia didn't earn it, but I would have liked to have seen how Georgia stacked up with Michigan, if I'm just sitting there as an SEC snob.
Sure, no doubt about it. But, I mean, what else are you going to say? Alabama beat Georgia 3 weeks ago or whatever it was, or a month ago. So there's really not much to say other than most people would agree with you that Georgia is a more talented team than Alabama this year, but Alabama won the game that mattered the most when those two teams played. I mean, to your first point, it's clear that this is not a vintage Alabama team. Nick Saban, he said after the game, I've never been more proud of a team and all that, because he knows what he had in September and he knows how they finished. So I think he wasn't BSing us. He literally was, probably surprised and proud of this team. We don't have much to complain about as football fans because we saw two great games. I thought going in all the teams were evenly matched. I picked Alabama and Texas, but, had no idea what was going to happen. Both games went down to the wire there. So it's not like we saw a blowout. Like, oh, man, I really wish we saw what Georgia could have done. Like, I think we got what we deserved as fans, and both games were great. Yes, Georgia's probably better, but they lost the game.
I don't know if anything came out today, but I was reading about Quinn Ewers as we were watching Arch Manning standing on the sideline.
Yeah.
And, Ewers, he had a good game, not a great game. Obviously, Penix stole the show. He played lights out, just an amazing performance. But I noticed that Quinn Ewers has not committed to the draft, nor is he committed to coming back. And then you've got Arch Manning sitting there. You've already had one other quarterback hit the transfer portal from Texas. So this is the day and age we live in here. But what do we think is going to happen there at Texas for quarterbacks?
I think both quarterbacks will be back next year. I mean, Quinn Ewers has basically hinted that he's coming back. I saw, a lot of the Texas media that I follow on Twitter said that if he sounded like a guy that's coming back. Arch has basically said he's coming back next year. So I think we will see both those guys at Texas. I'm signing day last year, when Arch signed, I made a joke, I think it was on our podcast or something like that. I said, look, I can't wait to see Arch starting at Tulane in 2025 or something like that. If it doesn't work out there, going back home, but it's just kidding there. But Arch is clearly looks like a guy who's gone into Texas. Hey, Quinn Ewers has been hurt a lot in his career. So even if Ewers comes back, Arch will probably have his chance at some point, but good to see a guy who's shown some patience there. But I think Arch will be back.
You would admit, though, that's kind of going against the grain of what we see
sure.
a ton in this day and age. If he actually does come back and say, I'll try to win the job, I mean, that would be kind of refreshing in one way, but on the other hand, be like, nobody does that now.
Yeah, I totally agree. I'm thinking, well, it kind of just shows you that the family, they understand football and how it works. When he committed there, he knew the roster. They had Quinn Ewers had already transferred from Ohio State, so I get it. But then as I'm saying that, I'm like, well, let's see. Peyton Manning won the job as a freshman. I don't remember Arch. I think I remember was it the Music City Bowl against West Virginia late in his freshman year he came on?
If I'm getting my years Eli right. came in very late. They had, what was it, Romero Miller was the quarterback yes. for a long time. But they did use Eli in the Music City Bowl. Mm-hmm. And then I guess that was his freshman year. I'm assuming that.
Yeah, I think it was. So my point being, hey, the Mannings, they had, one started, they basically started 3-4 years plus parts of freshman year for both of them. But, it is a family that gets it. They understand how the game works. And sure, Arch could transfer, but, like, why do you – things change, obviously. But, why go to Texas if you're going to transfer right away because Quinn Ewers is coming back? Like, he could have found a situation that was more advantageous to early playing time. He almost went to Georgia, too. Not sound like a recruiter, but there's going to be competition wherever he goes. Like, Arch isn't – let's say he transferred you know, I guess you could find a destination where there's an opening, but like everywhere you go, every elite place is going to have more than one good quarterback.
Yeah, that's the way I look at it, Mitch, where, you know, I think because of the family dynamics that, you know, he chooses to stay and battle for the starting job. And even if he doesn't win it, you know, he stays to try to finish out his career, his college career at Texas, because I can't, you know, yeah, I can see him going other places, but, you know, listen, if you beat yours out, then you're the guy. If you don't beat him out, then that tells you you need some more developing. And I think, you know, the Mannings understand that, that, hey, listen, if you can't beat out this guy, maybe you do need to sit for a little while longer.
Yeah, and let's say he transferred. I'm just making this up. Let's say he looked at, okay, Milroy was good this year, but he wasn't consistently great, and then he transfers to Alabama, and then they got Julian Sain, the number one quarterback, coming in as a freshman next year. Like, again, we keep saying the same thing, but there's just – you're going to have to compete wherever you are, and Quinn Ewers has been hurt both years as a starter. My guess is, like, I don't know, over-under in games Arch starts next year, let's put it 3.5. Like, Arch will be starting games next year, I think, at some point.
Mitch Light is with us with The Athletic. Mitch, I gave Nick Saban and Tommy Rees a lot of credit. I felt like once they figured out what Jalen Milroe was good at, it was a completely different team. They found what he was good at. I think Tommy Rees's play calling really highlighted what his strengths were for majority of the season. And then I look at yesterday, I'm watching that game, and I keep yelling at the TV, like, just run it with Milroe. He's not going to have any time to drop back. He's not going to have any time for his receivers to go out and actually go, you know, through their routes and for him to go through his progressions. They just kept trying to throw the football. And then the final play call at the end of the game, I'm thinking, game on the line? A trip to the national championship on the line, and that was the play call? What was kind of your evaluation of Tommy Rees, maybe as a whole this season, and also what you saw from him yesterday?
Yeah, I'm always very hesitant to criticize coordinators because there's just so much involved in with the game plan and what players are supposed to do and not. So, like, preface that with, you know, but I agree with you yesterday. Like, sometimes I feel like they get a little too smart. Like, well, we're running it. So now is a good time to pass because they're going to be. But, you know, also depends on, like, what Milroe sees at the line of scrimmage. A lot of plays have multiple options if, you know, there's eight in the box, all this stuff. So I get that. I would love to know, get some truth serum on the final play, because I'm sure you guys are on social media. You saw a lot of stuff, some quote-unquote smart football people looking at the wide version say, okay, well, here's what the play was supposed to be set up to do. But Milroe, the snap was low, so he kind of panicked and ran up the middle. And if they would have done this, it might have worked. But then you hear Saban in the post-game press conference. He's kind of reason to lie. He basically said that, you know, they had a play that they liked. Michigan made an adjustment, called timeout. Then Alabama had a play they liked, or Alabama called timeout, and they settled on that play, and that was, they thought they had the best chance. So, like, I don't know how many options there were off that play. But on the surface, yes, it got blown up right away. There wasn't good execution from the snap in the interior of the line, so it's easy to criticize now. I would just love to know what this play was actually supposed to do if that was it.
Yeah, I don't think there was a good snap all day long from Alabama center. It was constantly Jalen Milroe was picking the ball up off the ground. But last one from me, Mitch. Looking at the Michigan side of things, it's been really interesting to see the progression of the court of public opinion as far as Michigan is concerned. You know, a month ago, 2 months ago, we were talking about Jim Harbaugh and the Michigan program. They're cheaters. Now they find themselves in the national championship game. Has your perspective changed at all on Michigan and how good this team is, how good of a coach Jim Harbaugh is?
Well, I've been a big, aside from the fact that he's kind of a weirdo, I've been a huge Harbaugh, like, supporter and backer. Like, he's done a great job wherever he's been, starting at the University of San Diego in the NFL. I know there's some kind of, took him a while to get the ball rolling at Michigan, but the guy's clearly a very good coach. And I'm kind of conflicted on this Michigan team. I've always, you know, sort of liked it. No reason to, let, you know, growing up in New Jersey, there's a lot of Michigan people. I got a lot of friends who are Michigan grads and all that stuff. So I've always kind of liked them. But this whole, the sign stealing thing and then the reaction of the fans, you know, whatever fan base thinks the world's out to get them, I always kind of go in the other way. It's like, relax, you know, there's no conspiracies, all this. So, like, I was rooting against Michigan yesterday, just because I get kind of sick of them and the fans and all that stuff. You know, I didn't really care that much. I just wanted to see a good game. But I really appreciate, you know, I guess my point is, if all this wouldn't have happened, I would really appreciate this team and the way they play. I like J.J. McCarthy. I like the way they handle themselves, all that stuff. So I think it's a fun team. I think it's good for college football. to see some of this new blood and prove that, although I'm a recruiting editor at The Athletic and that's what I do, that you don't have to like sign four straight top two classes to win a national or compete for a national championship. So I think it's good for the sport. So kind of my long-winded answer of saying sort of conflicted about this Michigan team. I appreciate them, but there's some things I don't like about them.
I'm conflicted with them too because
I hate them. There's no.
I want to give them respect.
I knew there was no conflict for D.
Yeah, there's no conflict.
Never has been. Never will be. Never will be. Mitch Light covers college football for The Athletic. Mitch, appreciate your time. A happy New Year. Thank you for joining us, and we'll chat next week.
All right, sounds good, guys. Take care.
All right, appreciate it. All right, coming up next, we'll react to what we just heard from Mitch Light. Give our thoughts on what we saw in the bowl games yesterday. What we saw from Nico yesterday, and maybe kind of get a temperature check, a vibe check on the Tennessee fan base going into the 2024 season. We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline Willie D. Mays for brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet.